This is All of It. Our podcast hour turns to the community of Short Creek, which sits right on the border of Utah and Arizona. For generations, it's been home to both mainstream Mormons and members of the Fundamentalist Church of Latter-day Saints, or FLDS for short. Most know the FLDS for polygamy and the conviction of its leader, Warren Jeffs, on multiple counts of child sexual assault. Warren Jeffs was arrested in 2006. He was convicted in 2007 and is currently serving two consecutive terms of 5 years to life for marrying a 14-year-old girl to her 19-year-old cousin. To make the new season of the podcast unfinished, Sarah Ventry and Ash Sanders spent more than 4 years reporting on Short Creek, Sarah even moving there for a bit to discover how the people there feel about Warren Jeffs now, how he changed their community, and how it remains a community divided. Unfinished Short Creek is a co-production of Stitcher and Critical Frequency, and Ash Sanders joins us. Hi, Ash.
Hi.
And Sarah Ventry is here as well. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thanks so much for having us.
Of course. Ash, I want to ask you to give us a little bit of a refresher. How does FLDS differ from the mainstream Mormon church?
So the FLDS are a fundamentalist breakoff of the mainstream Mormon church. And the split dates back to the late 19th century when the mainstream LDS church banned polygamy and moved from practicing polygamy to practicing, you know, normal monogamous relationships. And the FLDS split off from the church because they wanted to continue to practice polygamy, which they considered to be God's law, and also to continue living communally and sharing possessions and land. So they moved down to Short Creek in order to do that and kind of formed a refuge for themselves to continue to practice those things.
And Sarah, as I mentioned in the intro, you described the Short Creek as a town divided. Was that divide always there, or did the leadership of Warren Jeffs create that rift?
I think the leadership of Warren Jeffs and also arguably of his father, Reuben Jeffs, who was the prophet before him, helped create and deepen that rift, certainly. The biggest divide that you see now is between believers and non-believers. So during the time that Warren Jeffs has been prophet, thousands of people have left or been kicked out of the church. Mm-hmm. When at one time, as Ash mentioned, this community was founded specifically by a religious group to be a religious community. And now you have people who are not religious or are not part of that religion anymore. So it does create some deep divides.
Now, Ash, in the first episode, you explained that everyone in Short Creek agrees on something. They agree the media rarely gets this story right. And
yes.
You folks spent a very long time reporting this story. So, Ash, first of all, what were you hoping to capture about the town?
Well, Sarah and I basically found each other because we were both interested in telling a story about Short Creek that wasn't just sensationalist and wasn't just about Warren Jeffs. Most of the people who have heard of the community, part of the community, and think of people there, you know, as all victims or, you know, backwards or whatever. So we wanted to tell a story that was actually about people and their entire journey, why they believed what they believed, why they stopped believing if they stopped believing, what was good about the community, as well as what was difficult or bad about the community. We wanted to capture the whole story and also talk about what happened after Warren Jeffs went to prison, because in many ways that's the most interesting part of the story, because you have ex-believers and believers who have to transition from what was essentially a church town where the church ran everything to a democracy where they have to work together to basically heal from the past and try to build a future together.
Sarah, is there anything that you wanted to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's exactly right. And I think, you know, we also noticed that there were a lot of stories that just weren't being told. There were a lot of people whose voices we didn't hear in other, you know, interviews or other documentaries or other books. And we really wanted to be able to explore those stories more deeply.
My guests are Sarah Ventry and Ash Sanders. We're talking about their podcast, Unfinished Short Creek. And Sarah, you went to live there for a period of time to report this story. What do you think you learned by living there that you might have missed otherwise? What nuances?
You know, I think there's a big difference between when you spend a short period of time somewhere and you, you know, are kind of focused on, you know, a task at hand. You know, you want to talk to a handful of people, you want to see a handful of places. When you're living somewhere, it gives you a chance to be a little, you know, maybe a little less focused on specific things and to be able to see the broad picture a little bit better. And it also allows people to get to know you better. And I think that the best reporting comes from when the sources feel vulnerable with the journalist and the journalist feels vulnerable with the sources. So being able to let my guard down and get, you know, make sure that the sources I was talking to had a chance to let their guard down was incredibly important. And I also kind of learned that this struggle between, you know, the past and the present and understanding what people are trying to make Short Creek, it's really messy and it's really complicated. And it's not something that I felt like I could understood in, you know, even a handful of reporting trips that I had done over the course of several years. Every time I left town, I would like get a call from someone or see something on Facebook about how something else had changed. And I wanted to be able to be there while those things were happening. So I think it's just a combination of making sure you're comfortable, other folks are comfortable, and then getting to see things unfold in real time.
Ash, I'm going to try to catch the listeners up on some of the ways that Short Creek works. In Short Creek, there's a hierarchy and then a lowerarchy. Can you explain that?
Yeah, that word was actually coined by one of the people we talked to while we were in Short Creek, mm-hmm. and she used it to describe this kind of change that happened in the religion when Warren and his father, Ruland Jeffs, came to power, again, in the late 90s, early 2000s. And before that, the community, everyone we talked to actually said they loved the community in the early days or middle days of the community, that it was a place where the prophet, who was the leader of the community, worked alongside the people, and everybody worked to make sure that everyone had food and housing and land. And it was a very cooperative, very... people felt like it was a very egalitarian society, even though the prophet was still in charge. But around the time that Warren and Ruland Jeffs came to power, that really changed. They moved down from Salt Lake, and they started saying, you know, we deserve the nice houses, and we deserve more wives, and we deserve more of the food from the storehouse. And they created this hierarchy where they were very much in charge, and then depending on your family name, you basically got more or less credibility in the community, which meant you got more or less of houses, land, food. So we had people tell us that even though everybody was supposed to share everything, when they went to the storehouse to get their food, they would get almost nothing, whereas a family that was higher up in rank would get a lot of food. And that happened with almost everything you could measure.
And to follow the timeline, Ruland Jeffs became prophet in Short Creek in 1986, and then he had a stroke in 1990s. And then there's this whole like weird Weekend at Bernie's thing that goes down. Sarah, how did Warren Jeffs take advantage of his father's stroke to take control of Short Creek?
Yeah. So the way that it was kind of described to us by people in the community and one source in particular is that when Ruland Jeffs had a stroke, he became less able to lead. He was less functional. He was less able to make decisions. And so Warren Jeffs arguably saw this as an opportunity to kind of step in. And so people told us he would actually whisper like in his father's ear or kind of lean into his father as though his father was whispering something to him and then speak through his father. So one of our sources described this as a Weekend at Bernie's strategy where his father wasn't very functional, but he kind of waved his arm here and slapped some sunglasses on him and made it look like everything was okay and was sort of like, you know, a puppet master for his father.
When Warren Jeffs officially became prophet in 2002, he brought on a lot of changes, as you've mentioned. I want to play a clip from your podcast, Unfinished Short Creek, about Warren Jeffs and some of the changes he made.
He started shutting down all of our community events and our celebrations, and he was creating new edicts all the time.
And what were some of the things that Warren was starting to implement in town?
Dress code, hair, everyone's doing the big wave, you know.
Another one was we could no longer wear red. That one really got me. And I opened my closet doors and I just started yanking stuff out that had the tiniest little stripe of red.
Do you think I like those ugly dresses? No, I was a stylish woman before Warren Jeffs came.
And then he started separating us from information from the outside world. You know, don't read newspapers and magazines and don't watch television. And then we couldn't even have what he called Gentile music and books in our homes.
All fathers were to be referred to as father, and same with mother. We don't use dad or mom or mama. It's mother and father.
He started saying, you can't associate with apostates, and you must shun apostates.
What would Warren say when he would introduce these new edicts? Did he provide a justification?
Oh, he didn't have to justify anything. Mm-hmm. You know, if God said something, that's... In fact, I think he introduced a saying, we don't introduce a question mark where Father has put a period.
That's from Unfinished Short Creek, a new podcast. The reporters are Sarah Ventry and Ash Sanders, who are my guests. So all of these different changes, Ash, what was the reaction of the members of the FLDS to all of these changes?
So this is the beginning of a huge split in the church. There were people, you know, Warren Jeffs basically started demanding total loyalty from people, and many people were happy to go along with that because they felt, you know, he's the prophet. He speaks for God. If he's telling us to do something, it's because God wants us to do something, and that's a really hard logic to get out of. So many, many people followed him, but other people had a very different experience, and they felt that Warren was starting to do things that went against the very spirit of their religion, that they'd always been taught to believe in family and believe in cooperation and believe in kind of a sense of communal goodness. And all of a sudden that was being taken away, and they were being split up from their families, and they were being told what to do in every aspect of their lives. So, you know, as Sarah said, thousands of these people decided to leave the church, or Warren would even kick them out. There was a Sunday when Warren stood up in church and basically pointed to 21 of the, you know, most respected men in the community and just said, you're out of here. So thousands of people were kicked out or left, and Warren Jeffs told his followers that people who had left, they're called apostates in the FLDS, that the members who remained were supposed to shun these apostates severely. So when they left, people, including their own families or even their wives or husbands, couldn't speak to them or even acknowledge that they existed anymore. So it created a giant split in the community that people are still healing from.
Sarah, why did the Southern Poverty Law Center decide to label FLDS a hate group?
So there were kind of two or three main reasons. One is because of teachings that they deemed racist. One is because of teachings they deemed sexist, and one is because of teachings that they deemed homophobic. So the Southern Poverty Law Center specifically quotes passages from, you know, times that Warren Jeffs was speaking in church or from his priesthood record, you know, where he stated that, you know, black people have the mark of Cain, and, you know, women are not able to hold any type of authority, and they need to follow what men say, and that, you know, being gay is an abomination, and all these sorts of things. So it was really during the time that Warren Jeffs was prophet that they created that designation.
Now, Sarah, you speak to a lot of people who objected to these changes that Warren Jeffs was making. Why was it so hard for anyone to check his power?
I think because, you know, as Ash was saying, he spoke for God on earth. So first of all, checking his power is not just questioning him. It's not just questioning a person. It's questioning God, which if you grow up in a really devout community is a really tough thing to do. And then secondly, because the price of speaking up was very, very high. So like Ash mentioned, you could be asked to leave the community. And once you become an apostate, the teaching is that FLDS are supposed to leave apostates alone severely, which means essentially being shunned, losing your family, losing your community, losing your support system, losing your house in some cases, possibly not having a place to live. You know, when everything is communal and the church owns everything, when you leave the church, you don't own your house. You don't maybe have a bank account. You might not have access to food in the same way. So you're taking a huge risk economically, socially, spiritually, and you have to be really prepared for that. And on top of that, people outside of the community are not always kind to folks who are FLDS. We talked mm-hmm. to one source who told us she had been thinking about leaving for a really long time. But she felt like every time she went into like kind of the city that's nearest to Short Creek to go shopping or to go to Walmart, she would be shopping and then turn around and look. And when she hadn't been looking, someone would put condoms in her cart. And the message was, you know, you polygamists have too many kids. You need to stop. And so the outside world was also not a welcoming place. So if you don't have a lot of resources and the outside world is a really scary place, it can be really hard to leave.
Yeah, one of the things that's really fascinating about the documentary is you give us the podcast. I feels like it's a documentary, is because you give us a lot of history of and some things I think people may not know about. And Ash, I'm going to ask you about one of them, is that the state of Arizona conducted a raid of Short Creek in 1953, and it ended up actually backfiring on the then governor. I'm curious, one, why did you want to tell the backstories, and how do those backstories relate to what we can find in Short Creek today?
Yeah, I think that the bigger backstory, you know, we kind of go into the history of mainstream Mormonism and move to the present day. And I think that's really important. That was really important for us to do because we wanted to contextualize the beliefs that people in Short Creek have instead of saying, oh, yeah, these. This community just sprang onto the scene recently with Warren Jeffs, and they believe this and that, and people think that's wild. We wanted to say, here's why they refuse to give up their beliefs, because they believe in a prophet. They believe a prophet speaks for God. They believe in this kind of collective society, and if you believe those things and your leader starts to do things that are wrong, like Sarah said, it's much more difficult to say, well, I'm just getting out of here, or I don't believe in this anymore. But with the 1953 raid in particular, that's an example. You know, a lot of mainstream Mormons and a lot of fundamentalist Mormons consider themselves persecuted because people haven't liked their religion in the past and have kind of driven them out of a lot of different places where they've tried to build a refuge. And when the people of Short Creek built a refuge on the Utah-Arizona border, they were always worried that the government was going to come in because they were a minority religious group and tear their community apart. And in 1953, the governor of Arizona, Governor Pyle, did exactly that. He came into the community to destroy what he called white slavery, which is how he referred to polygamy, absurdly. And he basically split families up. He split children up from their parents, and he split husbands and wives. And many of those children were sent to live with random strangers in Arizona, and many of the wives didn't come back to the community for years. So it's kind of the defining traumatic moment for a lot of people in Short Creek, and a lot of people felt that it set the stage for Warren Jeffs to take power because the community was terrified of the outside world, and they became more and more certain that the outside world was out to get them. So Warren Jeffs could say, see, they're trying to tear us apart. Mm-hmm. The outside world is evil. The only person you can trust is me. So we wanted to kind of put that in context so people could see why people continue to believe even as some really bad things started happening in their community.
Yeah, some of the first-person stories are really, really moving. The name of the podcast is Unfinished Short Creek. Its reporters are Sarah Ventry and Ash Sanders. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.